Proverbs chapter 2. So I will read it for us before we go into the sermon. My son, if you receive my words and treasure up my commandments with you, making your ear attentive to wisdom and inclining your heart to understanding, yes, if you call out for insight and raise your voice for understanding, if you seek it like silver and search for it as for hidden treasures, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. For the Lord gives wisdom, from his mouth come knowledge and understanding. He stores up sound wisdom for the upright. He is a shield to those who walk in integrity, guarding the paths of justice and watching over the way of his saints. Then you'll understand righteousness and justice and equity, every good path. For wisdom will come into your heart and knowledge will be pleasant to your soul. Discretion will watch over you. Understanding will guard you, delivering you from the way of evil, from men of perverted speech who forsake the paths of uprightness, to walk in the ways of darkness, who rejoice in doing evil and delight in the perverseness of evil, men whose paths are crooked and who are devious in their ways. So you will be delivered from the forbidden woman, from the adulteress with her smooth words, who forsakes the companion of her youth and forgets the covenant of her God. For her house sinks down to death and her paths to the departed. None who go to her come back, nor do they regain the paths of life. So you will walk in the way of the good and keep to the paths of the righteous, for the upright will inhabit the land, and those with an integrity will remain in it. But the wicked will be cut off from the land, and the treacherous will be rooted out of it. So, good morning. Welcome to Good News Church. My name is Fred. I'm on staff here. Over the last year, we've been going through the Gospel of John, and we just finished that up last week. And John is this incredible book that gives us this heavenly theology, talking about the most important things that we'll think about, issues related to life and death and resurrection, the identity of who Jesus is, the Son of God, come down from heaven, who died so that we could live. And when we stop and pause our lives long enough to really reflect on what's most important in life, we know that the message that's in the Gospel of John is probably the most important thing that we could hear. But if we take like a pie graph of what actually goes through our minds on a daily basis, most of the time what we're thinking about is not life, death, who is Jesus, and this grand theology. Most of the time, the stuff we think about is this very mundane kind of business of life. So for example, when I was in middle school, all I could think about was how I could get this girl to like me, right? And, you know, my parents, like, didn't really speak English, and they don't know, like, the cultural norms here, so I couldn't really ask, like, oh, Dad, like, how do I talk to a girl? So what did I do? I just watched a lot of movies and listened to a lot of radio and watched TV shows and tried to figure it out. When you're in high school, all you really start thinking about towards the end of it is, like, oh, how am I going to get into college? And you start thinking, oh, gosh, I got to study for SATs, and I got to have this spike in my resume or whatever. I think kids think like that. No, I didn't think like that at all. I figured it out, like, the last year. I was like, you mean Penn State? No. So you figure it out. You think about it. And then when you're in college, you spend all this time thinking about, like, what's my major going to be? Who cares? Like, it doesn't ultimately matter, but you spend all this time. I was a bio major, and now I teach Latin. Like, how does that end up working out? But in college, you're like, oh, my gosh, this is going to determine my future. I got to get a job. I got to figure out what's going on. And then, now that I'm middle-aged, what do I spend my time thinking about? I think about, like, man, how am I going to stay married? How am I not going to be selfish? How am I not going to let this devolve into this business type of relationship where I go, okay, 4 hours for you, 3 hours for me, and then figure it out? Or I think about, like, work, and I'm like, oh, I got to deal with this person. I got to deal with this student. I got to figure out this program. How am I going to work with it? And at this age, we're kind of stuck in this complicated, like, middle management situation where we're responsible for people, but we don't have the freedom to do all that we could do to make things better, and then we're beholden to the people above us. Our parents are aging, and again, we have to figure out, how can I care for my parents or my in-laws without ruining my own family and my own kids? And so this is all this mundane stuff, and it's nice to know that the Gospel of John exists. Life, death, resurrection, who is Jesus? But if that's all we narrowly think about, we might come away with the conclusion, like, man, does God really care about the stuff that I actually think about, which is kids, marriage, job, money, security? Now, when you fall into that trap, you might be tempted to look to these other places to gather information. So most of us, or a lot of us in this room, are old enough to remember life before the internet. And so if you had a history paper, you would have to go and hope that you had an Encyclopedia Britannica in your house and then go pull up the H volume and look up, like, I don't know, Hellenism or something like that and figure out what it said. And as I mentioned, if you wanted to get information about life, especially growing up in an immigrant home, you had to kind of look in all these different places. So I remember, like, to help me with this crush situation, I would stay up until like 10 or 10:30 at night, and on the radio was a program called Loveline with Adam Carolla and Dr. Drew. And I'd be sitting there listening to this going, boy, these guys are talking about crazy stuff here. But you had to kind of search out, like, oh, I'll take this from here and take that from there. Now, oh my gosh, it's so easy. You just open up your phone and you type a question and you get whatever you want out of it. Does God care about this normal kind of stuff that we deal with? And the answer is yes. And the book of Proverbs is evidence of that. It talks about all these things that I just mentioned, and it has something to say that just doesn't give us answers, but gives us a different perspective on our life. So the book of Proverbs we're looking at now, it's contained in the Jewish scriptures or Hebrew scriptures or Old Testament, and it's part of a genre of literature called the wisdom literature. So Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and Job all fit into that. Now, when you think of the word wisdom, you usually think about, like, an older person with graying hair sitting down on a couch, all the wise people gathered around them, and they're talking about the things they learned over life. Or you think about a philosopher or a professor who's in the library studying and reading books and writing. And then you also think about the counterpart, which is foolishness, and you think about all the fools that you see in the world. And this morning we were driving to church, and we saw a fool on the road. He was parking his car, and then he got out and he forgot to put it in drive, and the car started going away without him. And then I was thinking, like, oh my gosh, look at that fool. And then he got in, and then it was fine. So foolishness and wisdom, these kind of different pictures come into your mind. But when you think about wisdom in the book of Proverbs, what it literally means is skill, a skill. And specifically, it means a skill that you can use for battle. So Proverb is this book filled with skills for living, and chapters 10 and following come with what we know from the book of Proverbs, which are these short little sayings that touch upon a different area in life. But it's chapters 1 through 9 that give us a framework for thinking about, how do I incorporate this wisdom into my life? How do I think about the things that I'm learning? Where do they fit in? And Proverbs 2 in particular provides very good material for that frame, because it teaches us that Proverbs is more than a collection of life hacks, like how to get the pit out of an avocado. It gives us a way of looking at life that unifies all of our concerns. Everything that we're thinking about, everything that we're worrying about comes together under one umbrella, and then it helps us prioritize what is the most important thing of all the things that are running through my mind. So with that, let me pray for us, and then we'll look in Proverbs 2 together. Dear God, we just thank you so much for giving us this day. We thank you that this book of the Bible exists, because if it was just high theology, we might just think, okay, God cares about the important stuff, and I care about the less important stuff, but I guess there's this disconnect. But Proverbs teaches us, no, in fact, you do care about all the things that are worrying us and that are on our mind, and you give us guidance for it. So open up our hearts, open up our minds, and help us to see exactly what you're trying to teach us, how you're trying to view us, how you're trying to mold us, so that we can be people who invite you into our hearts and start living the way of wisdom. We thank you. In your name we pray. Amen. So Proverbs 2, it starts off with verse 1, and then when you go to verses 2 to 5, you notice a series of verbs. And these verbs are building up to a progression. So I'll read those verbs out to you. It says, make your ear attentive, incline your heart, call out, raise your voice, seek it like silver, and search for it like treasure. Ear, incline, call out, raise your voice, seek, and then search. And it says, this is how you should approach wisdom. And the payoff of this is, when you do that, when you go through this progression, you will ultimately find wisdom, knowledge, and understanding. So the first thing we learn from Proverbs is, if you want wisdom for your life, if you want some guidance on how to approach these things that are constantly on our mind, it puts the responsibility on us. And it says, if you seek it, you will find it. If you put in the effort, if you call out your voice and ask for wisdom, God will give it to you. This is important because it destroys this fatalistic view of our lives where everything seems to depend on circumstances or luck. And this happens when you compare yourself to other people. You think about your job, and then you look at your friend, and they're so happy and they're doing well, and then you think, oh, they just got lucky. They made that decision 20 years ago. If I had done that, then I would have been fine. Or you look at your financial situation, and you go, oh my gosh, that person's so lucky. How did they know to invest in NVIDIA? If I had known that, then I would have been fine, and this would not have happened, and blah, 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 blah. And we think everything depends on luck, and when we do that, when we look at our own situation, what that does to us, it says, well, I guess I'm stuck. There's nothing else I can do. I made this wrong decision many, many years ago, and now I can't change it at all. And this attitude shows up in something even as basic as the way we think about intelligence. So, for example, there's a researcher and a psychologist named Carol Dweck, and she looks at education and the way that education and psychology fit together. And she asks the question, what happens when you take young kids who've been told they're smart for their whole lives, and what happens to them throughout their school career? And so what inevitably happens is when they're young, they do well at reading, they do well at math. Oh, you're so smart, you're so smart, you're so smart. What happens? They get into middle school or high school, and eventually they come across a problem that's very, very difficult for them. And then they go, oh, what's going on here? And what has happened for these years that they've internalized this message, you're so smart, you're so smart, you're so smart? They've come to inherit an idea that intelligence is something innate. It's something fixed inside of us. It's something that is a part of us. And when they encounter something that is now too difficult for them, their identity shatters. This thing that I thought I was good at, I no longer can do. And because they were kind of being praised for something that they didn't work for, now they don't know how to overcome this difficulty that they're facing. And what Dweck found was you can actually shape the way people think about their intelligence by not praising their smartness, but praising their persistence, praising their effort. And when you say, wow, you worked so hard. I love the way that you failed this test, but you actually got this one right or that one right. And when you do that, it helps people understand that intelligence is not something fixed inside of you that you're kind of stuck with for the rest of your life, but it's malleable, it's changeable, it's shapeable. And when you inherit that type of mindset, when you encounter difficult problems at school, you don't go, oh, I'm dummy, I can't do it. You go, this is hard. Let me put on my hard big boy pants and then figure this thing out, right? And that small difference changes academic outcomes later on in school. They found that these students excelled over their peers who were told they were smart and probably had natural gifting early on, but because they never trained in character, never trained to think of intelligence in a certain way, they fell behind because so many things crumbled underneath them. The same thing is true, not just about intelligence, but about all these things that we've been talking about. Problems in your job, problems in your marriage, problem raising your kids. You might just say, well, that's the hand that I've been dealt. I'm stuck with it. There's nothing I can do to change it. But the book of Proverbs says, if you seek, if you call, if you raise, if you try and grab it or mine it out of the ground, then you can change your situation. What it's saying is the things that are constantly on our mind that are worrying us, we're not stuck there, but there are skills that we can use to help us with it. Marriage and being good at marriage is a set of skills that you can learn and grow in. Being a good worker is not about your boss or about the company. Of course, it's about those things, but it's also about a set of skills that we can do, that we can work with. So we have to understand the first thing, the core assumption of Proverbs 2 is the things that are on our mind that are giving us trouble are not fixed, but can be changed, can be shaped through wisdom. But how do we change it? We have to listen, incline, call out, raise your voice, seek, and then search. So when I hear raise your voice and call out, I imagine a Korean restaurant. Because when you go to a regular restaurant and you're hungry, what do? You sit there and then you wait and then you go, they got seated after us and they're getting their food first. When you're at a Korean restaurant, you go, and then you just yell and then you go, I need some kimchi. And then they bring you kimchi, right? And then when you think about seeking and searching for treasure, what is that? You are going into the ground and looking for something. So 10 years ago, this guy, named James Howell, lost a hard drive, and on this hard drive were 75,000 Bitcoin, and he had accidentally thrown it away. And for the last 10 years, you know what he's been doing? He's been lobbying the government saying, let me go into the landfill of my local area. Let me hire tractors and trailers and bulldozers and go in there and try and find this hard drive. In case you're curious, as of yesterday, 75,000 Bitcoin is worth about $435 million, right? And so what has he been doing? He's been lobbying the courts, lobbying the courts. He got hedge funds investors involved, and they say, we will pay for all of the extraction once you find it. He is searching and searching and searching, because when he threw it away, it was worth nothing. Now it's worth $400 million. At a Korean restaurant, you raise your voice and you say, I need kimchi! And then with James Howe, he has hired all these people trying to excavate this garbage, looking for this Bitcoin thing, looking for a bunch of zeros and ones. We have problems in our marriage, in raising our kids, in our jobs, in our in-laws, and we go, well, I'm stuck. Have you raised your voice and said, God, give me some wisdom, help me? Or have you thought to search for it and go, I need to find an answer that's actually going to help me in this situation, versus going, well, they have it better, they have it better, I guess I'm unlucky, I guess I'm stuck. Right, so that's number one. If you seek out wisdom, you'll find it. But when you seek wisdom, you learn that there's something more important than getting simple answers. In verse 5, he says, you will understand the fear of the Lord. And as I mentioned, nowadays we find answers on the internet, and we can look to the internet for all kinds of things. So I've been cutting my boy's hair, and so I looked up a YouTube tutorial on how to cut this way and cut that way and then cut on the front. It doesn't matter. He like squirms around like this. So if you check his hair, he's got like this misshapen mullet, and it's just awful. But I could find it at least on the internet. I looked up a recipe this week on how to make a chicken milanese out of a chicken breast. You have to slice it really thin, pound it out, and then flour, salt, pepper, egg, breadcrumbs, and then frying pan, and then, yeah. So you can find all kinds of stuff. You can look up home maintenance. And when you look at the internet, they tell you the answer to this one specific question, and the question is, how? How can I do this? How can I do that? How can I do this? How can I do that? But Proverbs tells us the answer to the question, why? What is the purpose of this? Why are you spending so much energy on this? How does this all fit in? And it gives us the answer that the ultimate reason for why is the fear of the Lord. The fear of the Lord. When you hear that phrase, it strikes a little bit of anxiety in you, and it probably should if you check the other places in the Bible where this phrase occurs. It does refer to people who are afraid of God's presence, afraid of God's power, afraid of his ability to crush enemies, and is afraid of his ability to judge. But it also means something broader. It's the idea of awe or reverence, and living your life in awe or reverence of somebody. And on a practical level, we understand what this means, right? When we're kids, we live in the fear of our parents. Oh, if I do this, then my mom's going to say this, and then I won't be able to do that, and then I won't do that, so I guess I shouldn't do that. When you're a teenager, you live in fear of your friends. Oh my gosh, if I wear this brand, then all my friends are going to be like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you. All this dumb stuff that teenagers say. When you're in college, you live in fear of like your professor or whoever. When you're at work, you live in fear of your boss. And when you're married, you live in fear of your wife or whatever the case may be. So we understand what it means to live in fear of somebody. And what that means is, every decision that you make, how you act, the way that you put yourself out there in public, you ask the question, how are these decisions going to affect my relationship with this person? And how is it going to be viewed by that person? And the book of Proverbs says, when you search for wisdom with all of your heart, ultimately what you come to find at the end of the day is the fear of the Lord. And you come to understand that the fear of the Lord is the ultimate aim of wisdom. We might come wanting answers for our marriage, job, kids, etc. But what we get at the end of the day is this answer, that it is the fear of God. And why is that so important? Why is that the end of this path? The reason is, our ultimate identity, before I'm a teacher, before I'm a son, before I'm a brother, before I'm a husband, I am God's child. And modern life tends to fragment our life. You put on a different hat when you go to work. I am this person at work. When you come home, you're this person at home. In your marriage, you're this person, and worlds start colliding, and it gets uncomfortable, and you're like, oh gosh, I don't know how to juggle all these things. Modern life fragments us, cuts us up, and stress comes from trying to make all of those different identities come together. Proverbs saying all those identities fit under this core identity, which is you are God's child. And if you get that relationship right, if everything that you do in your life fits under that umbrella, I want to be a good husband to please God. I want to raise my kids to worship God. I want to be a good worker so I can love my neighbor. If you get that core thing right, then everything else will fall into place. It's like the alphabet. You can't read, you can't write, you can't do research unless you have the alphabet first. You can't be successful, ultimately, as a husband or a wife or as a parent, if you don't have this core thing right first. It is the overarching identity that encapsulates the rest. If you look through the book of Proverbs, it talks about how this comes into fruition. Proverbs 16 says, "Commit your work to the Lord, and your plans will be established. In the fear of the Lord, one has strong confidence, and his children will have a refuge. Better is a little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure and trouble with it. And by steadfast love and faithfulness, iniquity is atoned for. And by the fear of the Lord, one turns away from evil." If you get successful in your job, great, you get all this money. But if you have forsaken your relationship with God and pursued wealth to the exclusion of that, you find that you've made compromises, you find that you've gotten things that you didn't want, you find that other things come in the back door, and you are no longer the person you wanted to be. The very first thing that we have to get right is the fear of the Lord. So the book of Proverbs might not give us the exact answer on how should I scale my business, or what are the exact words I need to use in the next argument with my spouse to win, if that's possible. But it does give us the why of life. Why am I doing all of these things? What is the purpose of it? How does this all fit in? How am I going to manage all the things that I'm concerned about? Consider the fear of the Lord. Start asking yourself the question, is this decision I'm going to make please God? Is this in line with what I think is most important? Does this align with my core priorities? The last thing that we learn about wisdom is that wisdom allows this crazy transformation to take place. Now, if you have, I guess you don't have it, but I'll just mention it. If you look at verses 7 and 8, it says, "One of the benefits of seeking wisdom is the Lord," capital L-O-R-D, "will be our shield, will watch over us, and will guard our paths." God, once we have wisdom, will watch over us, he will guard us, and he will be a shield. But by the time you get to verses 11 and 12, transformation has happened, a grammatical transformation. It's no longer God that will be our shield. It's no longer God that will guard us or watch us. It's discretion and understanding. And they use the same verbs. Discretion and understanding will watch, guard, and deliver you. The subjects, the grammatical subjects, have changed. And so what happened? In the first picture, where the Lord is watching over us, it's easy to think kind of mechanistically, like Deus ex machina, like, oh, if we do a Bible reading in the morning and we pray, then God is going to help me do well on this test. He will swoop down and change all my C's to A's and all my D's to B's, and now I will get 100 on this test. Or it's like Israel walking around Jericho 7 times on the final day and then blowing their horns, and then it falls. And it doesn't really match up, but God out of nowhere comes in this miraculous way and does something. Now, of course, I believe that God is capable of miracles. I think we should pray for the miraculous. But that is not the only way that God is with us. What happens between verses 7 and 8 and 11 and 12? So I guess it's like a math question. It's verses 9 and 10. So what happens in verses 9 and 10? It tells us that if we seek wisdom and we understand it, it will come into our hearts. It will be pleasant to our souls, and then wisdom, discretion will watch over, guard, and deliver us. What does that mean? When we call out for wisdom and say, God, I need your help on this thing, and we hear from him, we incorporate those words into our heart, and God's presence goes from the outside to the inside. God's wisdom goes from something out there to something in here. And now, it's something inside of us that is protecting us, shielding us, guarding us, delivering us. And if you've raised 2 kids with a significant age gap, you know what this means. We have a boy, Otis, and he's a boy. right? So what this means is I'll be cooking my chicken Milanese, and I'll look over 10 feet, and he's climbing on top of the air conditioner, trying to, like, open the window. And what do I have to do? Like a deus ex machina, I have to run and grab him and go, Otis, you're safe. You'll be fine, right? And when I think about that, I'm like, oh, gosh, Otis, what are we going to do with you? The other day, even my six-year-old, she was walking down the street drinking water, and she tripped, like, a full-on flat like this. I'm like, you can't walk and drink water at the same time? How are you going to take the subway? How are you going to go to college? How are you going to drive a car? How does that happen? We train them. We talk to them. We speak to them. And they hear our words, and then they internalize our words. They keep them with them in their heart. And what happens? Those words inside of them now protect them, now guard them, now deliver them. Our relationship with God is exactly the same. We should pray that God would deliver us and do these great miracles, but we should also do this, which is seek for him in his word, hear how lovely his advice is, and put it into our hearts and say, God, I want to live like this now. And when we do that, we realize, oh my gosh, there's all these other things that God is doing in my life that I didn't notice. So where were we? We started at the very beginning talking about, man, does God really care about these mundane things that I worry about all the time? And Proverbs tells us that the answer is yes. When we seek, we call, and we say, Chogyo, give me some wisdom. Let me learn the most important things in life. Give me help in my marriage. Give me help in these other things. And we cry out through prayer, God will speak to us. And then when we put those things into our heart, we realize, oh, not only does God care about these things, but he promises to be with us in our hearts through the words of wisdom, so that when we encounter problems in this area, we know that we're not alone, but that he's there. Not only is he there, but he's speaking and saying, hey, think about it this way. Hey, be patient. Hey, don't make money the most important thing. Hey, be a good husband, whatever it might be. I wasn't looking at you. Ooh, hey, we all should be a good husband or a good wife. Yeah, I was just looking around. So yeah, everybody be a good husband or a good wife. So what can we do practically? First, talk to your friends. Right? We all have these things that we're struggling with. Go to friends that you trust and say, hey, what do you think about this situation? What's your advice? Very just practically, just try to read through the book of Proverbs over the summer. We'll be going through this for a little bit of the summer. On Tuesdays, as I mentioned, we meet alternating between Bible study and prayer meeting. So not this week, but next week, we'll look at a study on the book of Proverbs. The ones we'll probably have for this rest of the summer will be work, money, and family. But if there's anything else you want to discuss, we can discuss that. But even in prayer meeting, we usually spend the first 5 or 10 minutes kind of sharing and praying. And in that sharing, you get to hear what other people are thinking about, how they're looking at their problems, and we can encourage each other that way. And so my encouragement to you is start listening, inclining your heart, calling out, raising your voice, seeking like silver and searching like treasure for wisdom, and God will give it to you. So with that, let's pray, and then we can continue to reflect through a time of worship.